Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 60, recorded Saturday, December 22nd, 2007. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this holiday edition of Travel Commons: tips for holiday travel and GPS, this year's travel gift. So this week, coming to you today from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois. I just finished up my business travel on Thursday, my Christmas shopping on Friday, and now just kicking back. That is until tomorrow, Sunday, when I have to cook Christmas dinner for 15 to 20 people. You know, December is a funny time to travel. At the beginning of the month, I was on a half-empty flight out to San Francisco. You know, after enduring months of packed planes, I was just stunned by the number of empty seats. You know, I had an inkling that this was going to happen when I walked straight up to the security checkpoint with no one else in sight. O'Hare was empty. The TSA screeners were relaxed and jovial, and during the flight, I walked back to the galley and chatted with the flight attendants. They were the happiest crew I've seen in a long time. Where is everybody? I asked them. They said, isn't this great? But it's just the lull before the storm. And of course, they were right. This month, I've made a couple of trips to San Francisco and New York with a quick day trip to Pittsburgh thrown in just for good measure. Each flight, no long TSA lines, no jammed planes, everything running pretty smooth until Thursday, my last flight before Christmas. SFO was a completely different place. Long lines, people with backpacks and strollers everywhere. It was like the summer again. The storm had hit. I pretty much escaped unscathed. A 30-minute departure delay as United worked through an oversold plane. It could have been worse. I could have missed the free wine tasting and the wine wisdom shop that kept me occupied during the delay. You know, nothing like a good teeth-scraping California cab at about 11 in the morning to give you, well, a better perspective on the day. I hope each of you traveling over the next few weeks finds your own way to keep a smile on your face and sort of goodwill towards men in your heart as you face down these holiday travel crowds. So following up, received some comments and an email since the last episode. Joy from Denver commented on the last episode's trains to planes topic, giving some local advice on how to easily and cheaply get to the rather remote Denver International Airport. Love your podcast, she wrote. I agree that it would be great to take the light rail from Denver to DIA. There is, however, an alternative. I live in the Denver metro area and recently took the RTD's Skyride to the airport. The cost varies depending upon your distance from the airport. I live at the farthest western stop, and it cost me $10 each way on a very comfortable charter-style bus. The driver even stored the luggage underneath and loaded and unloaded it for me. If I'd parked at the airport in long-term parking, it'd have cost me $36 for my four-day trip. This only cost me $20. The bus made a few stops in downtown Denver, so it would work for business travelers as well. Joy, thanks for that tip. That's a new one. Yeah, and actually, a lot of towns, especially a lot of remote towns, will have that sort of charter bus service going into the airport. I know Rockford, Illinois, for example, there's a number of charters that run that sort of 60 to 90 minute drive down into O'Hare. And so depending on where you are, those are always good opportunities, especially given how on-site parking rates are going up. That trade-off between the cost for a ride and the cost to park, that trade-off point is moving further and further back for a lot of folks. Stephanie Bosco agreed with my assessment in the last Travel Commons about San Francisco's BART system. She said, I totally chuckled when I heard your comments on San Fran's BART. Well, I thought it was super convenient for my friend and I to get from the airport to the city when we went through SFO to San Fran in October. I was totally grossed out, too, at the seats. I had been in New York weeks before and yearned for the plastic seats of the New York subway as compared to the cloth BART seats. I wondered what type of germs were soaked into my seat. Yeah, I tell you, those seats, like I said in the last episode, are just disgusting. You know, you would have thought they'd admitted their mistake and pulled out those cloth seats years ago. Two episodes ago in 58, we asked the question, given all the bad press around airlines' poor customer service, who raves about their airline? Lori Hum, who works for the state of Virginia's Department of Transportation, sent in this story about her recent JetBlue experience. JetBlue recently started a Richmond to Fort Lauderdale direct, which has me very excited. Traveling direct to anywhere but a hub from here has been a longtime dream of mine. Since my travel is mostly for leisure now, I can easily reach my family in Delray Beach in under 3 hours, and that includes picking up the rental car. Before that, it was a trip through Charlotte or Atlanta and a guaranteed delay waiting for the incoming flight. The only other place I regularly travel is Oakland, so of course JetBlue has become my airline of choice. A couple of weeks ago, my flight back to Richmond was delayed 3 hours because the incoming flight that originally started in New York was held for bad weather. So imagine my surprise when over the weekend I opened my email to find a $25 voucher to compensate for the delay. Now, I should point out that we were not compensated for the fact that the pilot aborted the takeoff midway down the runway, but hey, I'll take that voucher as proof that they care about me. Thanks, Lori. Thanks for that story. You know, let's hope that the recent cash infusion JetBlue received from Lufthansa, the German airline, allows them to keep up the good work. I also hope that they only received cash from Lufthansa, not any customer service advice. You know, I hate to truck in stereotypes, but my last in-flight experience on Lufthansa was anything but warm and fuzzy. Arnold Heines, who, by the way, very helpfully provided a pronunciation guide for his last name, sent in a note asking for some help from the Travel Commons. There's something I'd like to pick your brain on, and maybe listeners to the show can help too. I live in London and increasingly have to travel for business, a couple of flights a week now. Using the iris scan to go through immigration and becoming more familiar with the BAA hassles has made going through Heathrow and Gatwick much more efficient, though I'd never call them fun. As you mentioned in one of your latest shows, flying from or to the UK, and for a very large part within Europe as well, a person can only take one bag on board. Since my main carrier is BA, I'm out of luck because they have become the leading airline this year in lost luggage. So I'm absolutely adamant about only using hand baggage, also for the obvious speed and flexibility reasons. This has presented some overcomable challenges. Number one, finding the best and largest allowable bag. Number two, gathering a good supply of essential under 100 ml toiletries, which will still fit in that stupid Ziploc bag. Number three, slimming my electronic kit down using multipurpose adapters, etc. Number four, getting a good statistical database of flights with the least delays. However, there are two things I'm struggling with. When the time you spend away from home increases, you'd like to do some things you do at home also when you're traveling. One of those is going to the gym. Most of the hotels I go to have a gym, but the extra spaces my sneakers take in my bag is sometimes too much, especially on a 5-day trip. I'm curious if you or your listeners have any suggestions or experience with a super light or compact gym kit, socks, shirt, shorts, and shoes. I've not been able to find good shoes. Synthetic shirt and shorts and light cotton socks are not a problem, although nice ones are hard to come by. Since I only take one bag on board and I stay in one hotel for more than 4 days in a row, I need a bag which can house my laptop and documents so I don't have to carry them on their own or in my trolley bag. There are multiple packable, stowaway, or foldaway totes on the market, but they look like you're doing grocery shopping at your local market. I'm just looking for a commuter messenger bag which folds into a very small pack which I can use on location but not take up too much space in my onboard luggage. Any ideas to enhance my one bag quest? Well, Arnold has hit many of the problems for the frequent traveler trying to travel light, problems which are made worse by the draconian restrictions imposed by the UK's Department of Transportation, which we discussed in Travel Commons number 56. Traveling the UK is just about the same as every place else, one standard size bag, 22-inch maximum, and a briefcase or a laptop bag. However, departing from the UK, whether you're originating or connecting through, you're allowed only the 22-inch bag. According to British Airways website, any other bags, such as a handbag, purse, would count as one additional piece of hand baggage. Therefore, this item would need either placing inside your main piece of hand baggage or checking in. I mean, this is the reason I no longer connect through Heathrow. And for Arnold, it means having to find room in his 22-inch bag for his laptop, power supplies, expense receipts, and the like. Now, I find that workout shoes are the toughest problem. I've got a pair of New Balance shoes which take up easily a quarter of my 22-inch bag. The alternatives depend on what your workout is. If I'm just lifting using the weight machines or free weights, I've pretty successfully experimented with using a hiking sandal like a Teva. All you're looking for there is just sort of a stable platform for your foot. And the Teva's Velcro strap system lets you strap everything down pretty tight. However, they're no good for aerobic exercise, the treadmill or elliptical trainer. Their compactness certainly doesn't allow for any cushioning. You'll work up a very nice blister on your foot or any lateral support. As far as the bag is concerned, the messenger bag, I haven't had that problem, Arnold, so maybe some other folks can comment on that. And if anybody else has those suggestions from Arnold, post them on the website at Travel Commons or send them along to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. I'll forward them along to Arnold and also include them in episode number 61. And as always, thanks to everyone who contributes their thoughts, their stories, their audio comments, the voice of the traveler. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is tips for holiday travel. From some of the emails I receive, I know that a sizable percentage of you in the Travel Commons are not frequent travelers. More than one email has started with, "I don't travel much, so I guess you could say I live vicariously through your podcast." So for all the less experienced travelers, here are a couple of simple tips that will allow you to blend in, look like a pro, and generally reduce at least a little of the hassle of holiday travel. The most telling difference between an experienced and an amateur traveler is what the military calls situational awareness. Experienced travelers pay attention to their surroundings at the airport, the rental car lot, the hotel. Then they plan ahead and then they execute. And the place where experience shows the most is in the security line, probably the single worst experience in your travel day. There's a reason that the precious metal security line, the one for first class and high status frequent flyers, moves quicker, and it's not always because there are fewer people in it. Let me give you an example from last Saturday when I was flying home from LaGuardia. The guy in front of me lays all his stuff on the metal table, begins pulling things out of his bag, takes his shoes off, stops, looks at his bags, kind of stands back, looks at the situation, remembers something else, unzips his bag, puts something into his jacket, pulls out his laptop, goes, walks back, finds a gray bin. All this time, nothing is going through the x-ray machine. The guy has stopped the entire queue for 3 minutes while getting his act together. What was he doing in line before he got to the metal table? Talking on his mobile phone. So here's tip number one. Use the line to get prepared. Rather than trying to ignore the line by sharing one side of an intimate conversation with 50 complete strangers, Use the time to think and get ready for the screening. Throw out your water bottle. Take off big metal things like your watch and your phone and put them in your coat pocket. Don't take off your belt if you then have to hold your pants up. That's kind of defeating the purpose. But have your Ziploc bag out. Untie your shoes. Pull your laptop out. Think about this before you hit the metal table. Then, tip number two, never let the x-ray machine go hungry. The key to keeping the line flowing is keeping the x-ray machine fed. If you've prepared yourself in line, you should be able to flow through when you hit the table. Grab a couple of gray bins, put your laptop or video camera in one and your coats in another. Don't use more bins than you need. You don't need a bin for every suitcase. Indeed, I've stopped putting my shoes in a bin. I just drop them on the conveyor belt. Bin congestion at the back end of the x-ray machine is one of the leading causes of slowed or stopped lines. Keep sliding everything down the table. Keep up. Don't leave gaps in front of you. When you get to the x-ray machine, pop your suitcase in first, then your other bag, be it a backpack, a briefcase, a purse, then your shoes, and then your gray bins. Remember, no gaps. Keep feeding the beast. Tip number three. If you aren't prepared, step aside until you are. Chris Chufo, a longtime Travel Commons listener, told me about standing behind a guy who brought the Las Vegas security line to a complete and total halt. And for those of you who've flown through Las Vegas, that security line is brutal to begin with. So anybody who's stopping that thing is public enemy number one. First, she said, the guy kept pulling things out of his pocket. She said, it was like clowns from a car. Just stuff kept coming out. Gum, keys, more gum, loose change, more gum. Then he couldn't quite figure out how much of his camera equipment needed to be pulled out of the bag. I mean, reasonable question, but don't hold up the line trying to answer it. Stand back, wave people around, and ask a screener for help. You know, standing aside outside the security line helps also. You know, some other people will move faster than you, especially if you're traveling with your kids. You know, you're supposed to be, unlike me, who rushes my kids, you should be enjoying your time with your kids and walk at their pace. But walking at their pace doesn't mean everybody behind you needs to walk at your kids' pace. Stand aside, move to the right, let the fast people pass you by. When you're on a moving sidewalk or an escalator, again, stand to the right. If you're trying to figure out where you're going, don't stop in the middle of the hallway or the terminal. Move to the side. If you think about these three tips, they all have one key similarity: consideration for others. We're all in this together. We're all trying to get somewhere. And this Christmas season, give a little gift of politeness and consideration to all those around you. One final tip. Remember that it's Christmas for those working also. The TSA folks, the airline gate agents, the rental car bus drivers, show some consideration for them too. You know, they're just trying to get through the day. So as we're going over the river and through the woods at about 38,000 feet to grandmother's house, let's keep humming Joy to the World and remember probably what your grandmother told you, that politeness and consideration are sort of the social lubricants that can reduce friction. They can reduce the friction of the holiday travel season and keep us going through this with just a little bit of a smile on our face. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is GPS, this year's travel gift. An article in this week's Ad Age magazine declared GPS as hot for the holidays. Unit sales of GPS devices are up 488% over last year. You know, I'll tell you, that doesn't surprise me. Over the last 4 to 5 months, I've just seen them everywhere. Just about every cab I ride in now has a Garmin or a TomTom unit stuck to the windshield. Even driving in town, I see more and more of that telltale screen glow. Just today, I was driving back from picking up some champagne for Christmas dinner, and Sure as heck, there was a little TomTom unit stuck right in the middle of the windshield of a Hyundai Sonata. Last year when I bought my Saab, in-dash nav was the only option I skipped. I thought it made the dash look like a video game. And, you know, for the cost, over $1,000, I really didn't need it. When I'm driving in town, I usually know where I'm going. It's when I'm out of town in a rental car that I need directions. So finally, a few months ago, I picked up a refurb TomTom 1 from buy.com for $150, and it's been great. One advantage that the TomTom and probably all the other portables, the Garmin, the Magellans, have over an in-dash unit or, say, like a Hertz Neverlost, is the ability to upload information into them. You know, spelunking through websites like TomTomForums.com or POI, that's short for Point of Interest, POIPlaza.com, I found custom points of interest files for Starbucks, for Citibank ATMs, CVS pharmacies. And so a few weeks ago, driving to a client in Rockville, Maryland, I needed to find a Starbucks because I had to hit a Wi-Fi spot because I needed to download a presentation prior to the meeting. I had uploaded the Starbucks POI file a few weeks ago, so all I had to do was tap a couple of buttons, and bingo, I had a route to the nearest Starbucks, complete with a little Starbucks icon floating over its location. Very, very handy. Of course, now, you can't just blindly follow the GPS directions. Way back in episode number 38, I played a story from Udayan Tripathi's podcast about UK drivers following their GPS instructions straight into a river. You always have to worry about how current the maps are. Here in the Chicago area, they've just opened a new segment of Interstate 355. Of course, that's not on any GPS map yet, so to take advantage of that, you're going to have to actually think outside the GPS because none of those units, indeed, I'm not even sure if Google Maps or Yahoo Maps knows about it yet. Probably the experience that sticks in my mind more than anything was this last spring vacationing in South Africa. The other dad, Chris, rented a GPS unit from Avis. I think it was a TomTom, and that thing was always pointing us in the wrong direction. Driving through the Karoo to an ostrich farm, his GPS demanded that we take a sharp left turn onto a dirt road. It didn't seem right, but I followed anyways. Although after about, I think, 10 minutes of eating dust, I just stopped and pulled out a paper map. I don't know, maybe the GPS thought we wanted to hunt ostriches, not ride them, because it took us way into the middle of nowhere. You know, but that's no different from Google or Yahoo Maps. Sometimes their itineraries don't make any sense either. So these GPS units, I think they're a good gift for a frequent traveler or just a directionally challenged loved one. But don't burn those paper maps just quite yet. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 60. I hope you all enjoyed the podcast. I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Better yet, I hope you decide to tell somebody about this podcast. The Christmas music on this holiday special show is from Magnitude, the We Are Not Evil label. Pretty appropriate for Christmas music. Anyhow, the first two songs are from a Magnitude compilation appropriately titled Christmas Music. The songs Angels We Have Heard on High are by James Edwards and The First Noel by Ralph Russo Muhlenbrooks. The third song, Christmas Day in the Morning, is by Shira Kamen. They're available at magnatune.com. Check out the show notes for links. And always, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, audio files, or post comments onto the website. And to everyone, I hope you have a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and a great New Year. And I look forward to speaking to you again in 2008. And until then, take care, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.
his hill. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing can ease my mind, the one woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling,